Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, and my new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Listen to and follow Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show here on WILK News Radio, 103.1 FM, 910, 980 AM, or anywhere on that free Odyssey app. You can also get us on your smart speaker. Just ask it to play WILK News Radio, and you'll hear us live. It is coming up on 510 here, 77 degrees on this Tuesday, September 30th, 2025. So with all the news coming out of Washington of the most likely shutdown that's going to happen tonight at midnight, I am proud to bring in a Congressman Rob Bresnahan of Pennsylvania's 8th District to give us the news straight from the heart of the beast. Congressman, thanks for joining us today.
Hey, Rob. Good afternoon. I think it's good evening at this point. How are you doing?
All right. So give us the latest that's happening down in Washington. I know you've had a couple of all-hands calls with the House leadership. The Senate seems to be doing their thing, which is more of a PR spin on the Democrat side of the Senate, should I say, Chuck Schumer. But what can you tell the voters here of Pennsylvania's 8th District in Northeast Pennsylvania?
So I'm actually in Washington right now. I'm literally pulling into our Longworth office building parking spot in the next 3 minutes. But I think the plan is, or at least what has been published, is the Senate is planning to vote on the CR or the continuing resolution in about 20 minutes or so. And I think it's really important for the listeners to understand what a continuing resolution is. And I'm sure you have been educating your listeners, but I want the listeners to hear it directly from me. The CR is a temporary law that keeps the U.S. government funded when the official budget isn't passed on time. And this specific CR in which we are talking about that I proudly voted for is to keep the government open for 7 weeks. And this will extend funding at the previous year levels to avoid a government shutdown, giving us more time to agree on full year-long funding bills. Now, there's a fun fact. The Republican bill is the same short-term funding extension that virtually all Democrats voted to pass 13 times during the Biden administration. So what does a government shutdown actually mean? And, you know, I'm a new member of Congress, so many people in and around Capitol Hill, this is the first time a lot of us have been actually plagued with the shutdown. But something that isn't meeting the eye is there's going to be disruptions to the federal flood insurance program. Housing loans could be jeopardized or delays in processing. 10,000 federal workers in our district have no idea where their next paycheck will come. National parks could shut down or have significantly reduced staffing loans. FEMA could run out of funding. If there is a hurricane or a natural disaster, we could see delays in tax refunds and tax return processing from the IRS. And here's something that's really close to my heart. We've all been tracking the air traffic control situations that have been unfolding in Newark and all across the United States. Traffic control training will also stop, and leading to the shortage that we already have inside of our air traffic control systems across the United States. So there is a lot more than what meets the eye when it comes to making sure the government remains open. Now, I understand some of the ideas and the talking points, the premium tax credits, but there is a time and a place for that dialogue to take place. but it's not holding hostage the federal government or using this as ransom. And I was one of the original co-sponsors on trying to find a solution for the enhanced premium tax credits to make sure that health insurance remains affordable. But there's a time and a place to have those dialogues. Let's keep the government open and let's go back to regular order and actually have these dialogues. The administration, the president have indicated, as well as Leader Strun, that they are willing to have these dialogues, but it's not going to be while the government is shut down. Something I did is I sent a letter to the CAO asking for my pay to be withheld during the shutdown period. I'm obviously incredibly disappointed that we're approaching a shutdown. I never ran for Congress to shut down the government. So there is just a lot of different moving pieces here. And I'm hoping that we're going to learn a lot more in, you know, 16 minutes or so.
One of the big things that I've spent the past, you know, last week and some of this week doing is talking the difference, because Democrats in Congress seem to be very good at conflating legal immigration with illegal immigration. And here we've seen a lot with the premium tax credits versus the enhanced premium tax credits. Now, the premium tax credits go back to the Affordable Care Act of 2010. The enhanced premium tax credits was a COVID era put in ARPA, the American Rescue Plan Act, and the Inflation Reduction Act to extend it to the end of 2025, which basically took away an income cap from those enhanced credits. Now, it doesn't mean that these aren't good programs. I think they just need to be drawn down. But there is a specific difference there. And I got into a back and forth with one of your colleagues from Wisconsin, Representative Pocan, who instead of answering any of the questions, just resorted to calling me names, which was very telling on his side. And then you have Chuck Schumer today going on, you know, grandstanding and saying, you know, we're not going to be held hostage by this. But then outright misleading the public, saying that no illegal immigrants get Medicaid, Medicare, or access to the Affordable Care Act. And I listed a list of ways that they do. And the public listens to this and says, well, you see, this is why they're holding the line. No, they're misleading the public. And like you said, this is a bill, this is a continuing resolution that they've voted for 13 times. They are holding the government hostage because they're not getting their way, and they feel this is a last-ditch effort to kind of throw that Hail Mary pass and kind of hope the pressure swings, you know, the opposite way and not on them.
And I think it's also, you know, we obviously, the Republicans have the House, we have the Senate, and we have the White House. So I'm not sure if everyone understands that we need 60 votes in the Senate in order to pass and advance the continuing resolution. Right now, we have 53 Republicans. So there's some anticipation that, you know, John Fetterman, Senator Fetterman, both Pennsylvania senators, voted to advance the CR. But still, the numbers still are not adding up. So obviously, the House is not scheduled to come back until next week. I'm down here. I've had, you know, bipartisan conversations with some of my colleagues and, you know, trying to find a way to muster up some goodwill as to where this could go through the Problem Solvers Caucus. But there seems like everyone is playing chicken right now. And I think we're totally within our right as Republicans right now. I mean, tax-funded government benefits for illegal aliens? Absolutely not. Prop up liberal news outlets? Absolutely not. And also, the Rural Transformation Fund that we fought exceptionally hard to make sure northeastern Pennsylvania was included in that fund would also be repealed.
That's just incredible. And that was one of the major passing points of the Big Beautiful Bill Act. That stipulation was in there. Yeah. A lot of the public, and I'm getting the text messages now, said, you know, Congress as a whole fails America when something like this happens, when the government shuts down. There's been the messaging back and forth, and you obviously have the media swinging their way and again, telling half stories. This government shuts down at midnight tonight. I've already seen the messages back and forth from Democrats looking to see they want to take on the House floor or the Senate floor for every hour starting at midnight tonight and do some grandstanding, you know, hyperbole and promotion. Now, the American federal workers, the one who really suffers here. And you named a listing of what happens. You know, I'm getting messages, you know, do banks shut down? Does the post office shut down? And no, banks and the post office does not shut down. I already messaged that person, but I wanted to put that out there. But America does lose when the government doesn't function properly. What is the goal tomorrow morning when everyone wakes up and the government is shut down to try to get this forward? Everyone I've talked to in Washington, both this morning and yesterday, they don't think this is going to be a long time shutdown. They think it'll be very quickly corrected. But it does appear at this point it's going to happen.
Well, I think it's important to know for all your listeners, we will be in our office. We will be responding to constituents and to inquiries. We will be accessible. So if there are different challenges that any of the listeners may be exposed to, we will certainly be standing willing, ready, and able to assist in those processes. We're in the early process of setting up a telephone town hall as well to really provide a lot of additional insight as to what to expect, what the OMB and the administration plans to. We have not seen their comprehensive plan on what it looks like. We've seen some draft iterations, but we will be fielding calls. Our constituency service lines will be 100% accessible both inside of the district and in Washington. And, you know, obviously this is my first shutdown as a member of Congress, but our office will be ready to assist any which way possible.
As far as the Republican conference, now the House has done their job. A lot of people don't realize you guys have passed the continuing resolution. This is a Senate issue. And like you said, it appears one or two senators may have crossed over. Senator Fetterman has already publicly said that he is not voting for a shutdown. So I think we need seven to come across. Do you think that's going to hold, and are they going to continue on the Senate side to, and I understand you really don't have any say one way or another, but keep bringing it forward to keep putting them on the record, say, as this goes on, to let people know?
There was a conversation inside of the Senate to reauthorize the federal flood insurance program before the CR in an effort to try to generate some goodwill and making sure these critical programs remain funded. But still, if the Senate was to pass the federal flood insurance program, it would still need to come back over to the House. But you mentioned it and summarized it perfectly. The House of Representatives did its job. We passed the continuing resolution, including one Democrat, Jared Golden from Maine, voted to not shut down the government. But that would then need to come back over to us. And there's some talks where the House leadership on the Republican side is looking to bring us back a few days earlier, but we have not been given any specific instructions. I'm down here. We will be inside of the Washington, D.C. office. I'll be answering phones. Our team will be answering phones. There's going to be a lot of questions. There's going to be a lot of confusion, but that's what we're here to do. Constituency casework is something that I place in the highest priority out of anything that we can do as a member of Congress. So please reach out to our office. That's what we're here to do.
All right. And Congressman, if you get any updates or any movement here, please have your comm staff let me know so I can get it out to the public as fast as we can. But I appreciate you taking the time. I know it's a busy time down there. I was you know, having some conversations with some comms people from the speaker's office, and it was like nailing Jell-O to a tree trying to get them with everything going on down there.
Well, we're here, Rob. We will certainly relay the information as we get it in real time when we get clarification on, you know, whether it's the national parks, where we might see a potential impact, and we will relay the information in nearly real time.
All right. And unlike any past shutdowns that happened under Democrat administration, where they tried to inflict as much power, if you remember, you know, World War II veterans during Heritage flights being blocked from memorials in Washington, D.C., I don't see any of that happening with the leadership that we have now in the administration, the House, and the Senate. But like you said, we do need 60 votes in the Senate. So, you know, even though there's the majority control, that's not the way the law works.
And what we want to make sure is that our veterans training and support services remain in effect to at least some capacity. But that's another category of service that could see increased call times, wait times, if they're not staffed at 100% of where they need to be.
All right, Congressman Rob Bresnahan of Pennsylvania's 8th Congressional District, giving us an update on the possible shutdown that's supposed to take place tonight at midnight. Congressman, thanks for joining us and letting us know what's going on.
Rob, thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
Thank you. And just pulling into the office there, it was great to get him on. I kind of was hoping it was scheduled to have him on, but it was not sure because he was traveling and back in Washington now. So it's great to get that information directly to you. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio. And again, I got a texter that was asking me, do banks and mail shut down also? My elderly parents are getting worried. And no, banks and mail service does not stop during a government shutdown. So, I mean, there are things that do, but mail delivery continues. Regular mail delivery, retail services, and other United States Postal Service operations will not be interrupted during a shutdown. Post offices remain open. FDIC-insured accounts, nothing is affected there. Federal Reserve operations, nothing is affected there. Major bank regulators, nothing stops there. And the majority of banks are, even though they follow federal holidays, they are private institutions. So again, not affected. Now, what could be delayed is certain types of federally backed home loans, mortgage applications, Small Business Administration loans, flood insurance, and financial assistance that goes through federal credit unions and such like that. So, there's as far as banking and post office goes. It's not an all-inclusive list. So, that's what goes on there. We also had that big meeting up in Archbold about the data centers. And I have spent a lot of time not only looking at the data center proposals and operations here or proposed operations here, but nationally as well. And this is not just unique to Pennsylvania. There's plenty of places around the nation to look to where these data centers are already up and running and moving and such like that. But although I think it's a good idea for the businesses to be here, these data centers to be developed and made here, I have kind of morphed in my own feeling. And again, none of these are scheduled in my backyard or looking to build in my township. And I think that the people like the residents of Archbold who showed out, I believe 200 people showed up to this. They had 24 speakers from the community speak. Make your voices be heard, without a doubt. And I think if they were to be built in my area, and they very well could be, but I'm pretty...
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, and my new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Listen to and follow Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Hilly and mountainous up by me, so who knows? They need to supply their own energy. They cannot draw from the public power grid. And if they need enhancements to the power grid, either moving it or bringing it in, that shouldn't be on the backs of everyone else as well. That should be these companies coming in to build these multi-million dollar data centers should be on the hook and the investment to improve the entire grid around them as well. And as far as water supply, it's not a major concern of mine. It does because they do draw a lot of liquid like that, but the fact that they can use gray water from our sewage treatment plants, that's if there's one nearby or one to be built for an area nearby. But they can also use coolant type systems to where it's an artificial, like an antifreeze that's used. And again, what kind of issues are there for the environment if a situation like that happens to have some sort of malfunction? Those are the things we need to look at. But I think communities are doing a good job of getting the word out. I think a lot of people are doing a lot of research, and it's not hard to do. But like I said, there are plenty of these centers that are impacting a lot of other areas that we can look at and learn from to, if it is done here, to do it better, to do it with more oversight, to do it with more investment in the community, not just using property for financial gain and not really caring about the surrounding communities. So good for you, Archibald. It looks like you're being heard. And keep showing up to these meetings and keep having your voices heard. Keep pressuring your public officials and getting answers from them and make sure they're transparent with you. Some of them haven't been so. It's 5:31 here at WILK. It's time for the news with Paul Michaels. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio. If you missed the interview with Congressman Rob Bresnahan at the 5 o'clock hour, we will have that up on our social media later today. So you can check it out there and re-listen to it. It's 5:37, 77 degrees. So I really see the change up by me, but trees in northeast Pennsylvania are quickly changing to our fall foliage, and it looks like, as per experts, it's going to happen a little sooner than usual this year. And I was just talking about this with my wife. Based on the not drought, but the, even them saying despite droughty conditions, so I guess we can call it a drought, or lack of rain we've gotten. I haven't had to cut my grass in 3 weeks. I think this weekend I'm going to give it a trim. But, it was kind of dried out, and anytime I mowed it, it would just dry out even further. So I kind of let it go a little bit. It really hasn't grown. But the leaves are not only changing fast, but falling fast. I saw that my sugar maples and my silver maples have all done pretty well. And, that's what they said is going to happen, the experts in the northeast region in forestry. It says we've already seen the vibrant reds and red maples, sumac and Virginia creeper. Sugar maples are adding a variety of colors from a deep warm orange to a dull brown, depending on the growing site. Hickories are also adding the muted orange across the landscape. Brighter hues of yellow can be seen in the birches, cherries, and American beech. And there's still a fair amount of green in the region until the oaks and some of the beech trees start to change. But it is going to happen a little sooner than later this year. Peak is normally doesn't give a date. Because of the dry conditions in late summer and early fall, foliage may not be as vibrant. It will be noticeable and will fade faster. So the leaves will not be up on the trees. They will die quicker because of the lack of rain that we've gotten. The lack of rain means leaves drop from the trees more quickly. The peak foliage will last a week compared to the typical 2 weeks of peak foliage. When the foliage peaks also depend on the tree type. Because of the diversity of species we have in Pennsylvania, you could see peak color change in a variety of species in different areas. Looking to see if it gives a day. Doesn't really give a date, but they are changing fast. The colors are already out there. My son, when him and his wife and my grandson were up to leave for Disney World, they were hoping that the leaves would be changing, and they were just starting. But it looks like when he returns, and he says, hopefully when we come back in 10 days, it'll be a lot better so we could see the fall. Because, he's a Pennsylvania kid, raised here, maybe not born here, but raised here since he was a little guy. And loves the fall here in northeast Pennsylvania. So when they come back, it looks like that they will have some good leaf coverage. But a lot of leaves down on the ground already. I was looking at my sugar maples. In the front of my house, I have alternating sugar maple, silver maples. And there's eight of them. So four of each. And they're both changing differently. The sugar maples are definitely a little behind the silver maples, which are already almost fully red, at least on the tops. But a lot of their leaves have already fallen, so we'll see what happens. It is 5:40 here at WILK, time for 2020 traffic and weather together. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show as we start to close things down here in the studio in Pittston. It is 5:45, 74 degrees on this beautiful Tuesday, September 30th, last day of September. There's been a couple of things that have really raised the questions. It's interesting. The Secretary of State for Maryland, the Secretary of State for Maryland said, and you, there are a bunch of states that are fighting the Trump administration who are asking for voter rolls from their states, Pennsylvania being one of them. But Maryland, the Secretary of State in Maryland, sent a letter to the Trump administration saying that they are refusing to send the information to their voter rolls because they are concerned that it'll be used for illegal immigration enforcement. Now, these are voter rolls. Don't they keep telling us that illegal immigrants aren't allowed by law to vote? There's no illegal immigrants voting in America. In federal elections, anyway. There's some municipalities and cities that allow them to vote. But not in federal elections. That is against the law. Why would giving the voter registration information for federal elections by Maryland be used for illegal immigrant enforcement unless maybe some of their information's on there? So it's just a question to make you think, what? That's the excuse they gave. They do not want to give their voter registration information to the Trump administration because it may be used for illegal immigration enforcement. Well, why are illegal immigrants anywhere in a database for voter registration? You have to ask yourself that. The other one came out of Oklahoma, where the governor of Oklahoma, Kevin Stitt, said if New York wants to hand out CDLs, commercial driver's license, to illegal immigrants with no name given, that's on them. The moment they cross into Oklahoma, they answer to our laws. The Oklahoma Highway Patrol performed an enforcement along I-40 and apprehended 125 illegal immigrants. This is keeping Oklahomans safe. And the governor of Oklahoma posted a picture of a New York State driver's license, a commercial driver's license with the star on it, meaning it was a real ID commercial driver's license. It had the gold star on the top right corner. Now, the picture and some information is blacked out. The name and where the governor said, if New York wants to hand out CDLs to illegal immigrants with no name given, no name given was in quotes. The name on the driver's license is no name given. That's what they have listed for the name of this driver. Richmond Hill, New York, 11418, limited term CDL. So a temporary CDL was issued on April 14th of 2025, and it expires May 26th of 2028. So it's a limited term CDL, but it's good for 3 years. It's a male, 5'8". No name given. Commercial driver's license. You cannot make this up. But yet, we needed a real ID to get on a plane. We need real ID to get into federal buildings. But New York State is issuing a license that says no name given as a name. And you could see the picture that the governor posted on my Facebook page because I put it there. Because you can't, if I just told you you couldn't believe it, you'd say, this can't happen. And then you go to Des Moines, Iowa, where you have a superintendent of schools in the largest school district in the area who was an illegal immigrant with a gun charge. And he's the superintendent of schools who, when now they're searching even further, said he was a police officer, said he was in the military. He was actually an Olympian in Guyana. That's true. He came in last or second to last in the 800-meter back in one of the past Olympics. He's changed his date of birth multiple times. He's worked in different school districts. He was the superintendent of schools. And after he's arrested by ICE and flees and is caught with a gun, being a person not to possess a gun because he has a prior gun arrest in Pennsylvania for a loaded rifle in his vehicle. So now two gun charges. He's the superintendent of the largest school district outside of Des Moines, Iowa. And the school board president who hired him had a press conference Not to say we screwed up. Not to say we're looking into a full investigation on how this happened, and we're going to make sure, and I assure you, it's never going to happen again. No, you know what she said? I'm going to take a page out of that superintendent who was lying and an illegal immigrant and had gun charges. We're going to take a page out of his book. And I'm going to ask for what's called radical empathy. Radical empathy is what they asked for. This is a public statement to the public that the president of the school board gave. And that's when you don't agree with something, but you have empathy towards it. No, outside of you and your school board cohorts, no one agrees with an illegal immigrant being the superintendent of schools working in America illegally with past gun charges who's lied multiple times pretty much about everything. No one has radical empathy there. And the fact that that's your public statement that you want to make shows you probably shouldn't be in your position either. And if you think the two of them are like, Rob, stop it. You're living in an alternate universe. Where are you getting this stuff from? Look them all up there. Here's another one. A 24-year-old illegal migrant. Dad. He's a dad. 24-year-old illegal migrant dad was caught posing as a high school kid here in the Northeast. One phone call ruined it all. The residents of Perrysburg, Ohio, his school pals and his guardians who welcomed him in, Anthony Emmanuel Labrador Sierra, stated he was a 16-year-old human trafficking victim. There's only one problem. He was a 24-year-old, had a baby with his ex-fiance, a town over in Toledo, Ohio, but his scheme worked for over a year. With authorities falling for a birth certificate he produced, shaving 6 years off his age. Then one night, Evelyn Camacho, 22, the mother of his child, called the house where he was living and spilled the beans on who he really was. His new guardians, a couple in their 60s, Kathy and Brad Mefford, answered the phone. They said they were questioning what the truth was. Did he lie to me about being an adult, or did he lie to them about being a child? The mother of his child said to them. I didn't know what was going on, and I care about him. He's the father of my daughter, she said. Well, the adoptive couple, the guardians, the Meffords, called the school, which in turn called the police. They searched his room and made unsettling discoveries. Now, he was portraying himself as a 16-year-old soccer player in high school. He's a 24-year-old illegal migrant with a child. When they searched his room, they found a burner cell phone, fake ID, a semi-automatic pistol, and three loaded 9mm magazines, according to the arrest affidavit. He has since pled guilty to lying on immigration forms and on application to purchase a firearm. He's been handed over to ICE and faces decades in prison. Why did he do it? Well, probably he knows why he did it, and maybe not even him, to be honest, Anthony, is impulsive, they said. The case has upended a 25,000-person town, many of the residents questioning how easy it was for him to dupe authorities. Well, he said he was from Venezuela, and he had a forged birth certificate from Venezuela. We have no way of verifying a Venezuelan birth certificate, and if someone shows up to a school, which the school was questioned, a statement from the Perrysburg school read, we reviewed our enrollment process and confirmed we followed federal law. So the school is saying they did nothing wrong. They reviewed their enrollment process and they followed the law. Schools are required to immediately enroll unaccompanied minors without requiring standard enrollment paperwork. While we're not required to, the school district did obtain his birth certificate. Yes, a fake Venezuelan birth certificate that no one, not even the federal government, could verify is real. So how do we expect a school district to verify it's real? According to the report filed by the Perrysburg Police Division, the saga began on November of 2023 when he called Perrysburg School to see about enrolling as a student. Well, there's your first heads up. What 16-year-old is calling a school to enroll himself at school? The report said that he claimed to be homeless, an immigrant from Venezuela, and the victim of human trafficking and wanted to become a student here. On January 13th, 2024, he met with school officials and produced a birth certificate that appeared to show he was born on December 2nd, 2007. Unclear what country issued the birth certificate, but it was later found to be Venezuela. He moved in with the Medfords, parents of four children, on March 24th, and they were granted permanent guardianship in November 24th. And because of the paperwork that they were given, he was able to get an Ohio driver's license with his fake age of 16. He was part of the JV soccer team, went to the parent, went to all the family cookouts that they had for the soccer team that the sponsor, the team parent sponsor group, booster club had. Said he was very charismatic and very nice. In hindsight, he had a different build than the average teenager. He also had multiple tattoos, blatant tattoos, but blended in well enough that the family held the dinner in their home for the school soccer player. And because he was a victim of human trafficking, they really didn't question the tattoos. 24-year-old, posing as a 16-year-old high school student, enrolls in high school, gets a driver's license in Ohio. A family takes him in who has three other children. And when the police finally catch up to him, they find a burner phone, fake IDs, a handgun, and loaded magazines in his possession. How upside down is this world? Well, I just gave you three stories that just aren't coincidence. It's 5:57 here at WILK. We'll be back. Well, due to popular demand on the text message line, I just posted that story about the 24-year-old posing as a 16-year-old in high school in Ohio. Again, these are stories, just three I gave you, that you could not make up if you tried, right? Just goes to show how crazy and upside down our world is right now. And the fact that both of these people, the no name given, got a commercial driver's license, and this 24-year-old posing as a 16-year-old illegal migrant got a driver's license in Ohio. That's what happens when you upside down our document system. This is why you get people like Representative Ocasio-Cortez when it comes to transgenders in high school sports saying, well, what are they going to do? Bring them into the office and check? Well, no, if you didn't change the status of their birth certificate, letting them put on whatever they want and change it, then all you'd have to do is ask for a birth certificate, which all our kids have to show to pretend sports anyway. 6 o'clock. We'll be back.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah, you're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver. Ready for honest conversations about thriving in midlife? Listen to and follow my new podcast, Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.